Good morning.
Hi, Elias.
And how have you been proceeding?
Very well, and it's great to speak with you again.
And what have you been engaging?
Well, I want to start out with an insight that struck me this morning as I was waiting online at the supermarket, which it might sound negative, but it is certainly not, because it's not coming from a point of being resigned, but it was the idea if I could be 100% okay with never creating what I thought I wanted. In other words, or what I thought I should create.
Interesting premise.
And it immediately made me feel better because I realized it was a moment of recognizing the judgment that I hold upon myself. In relation to what I think I should be doing or moving towards or creating or doing better.
I would also express that it might emphasize also what you have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was the immediate insight after that was into, you know, even the whole morning has been kind of, as I dropped my son off at school and just appreciating the time we have together. He's in his last year of elementary school. And I know from the feedback that I heard that he's enjoying the extra time that we're spending together. And so, very, very interesting.
It does give you a different appreciation of being satisfied.
Oh, absolutely. And you spoke about that last time, which was expanding that state of satisfaction, and that has become one of my primary goals.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is definitely significant.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say that it is tremendously significant because most individuals aren't aware of being satisfied with what they have and what position they're in.
Yep.
Therefore, what they notice and what they pay attention to is what they don't like, what they don't want, and what they aren't satisfied with.
Right. What's not here now, or what?
Precisely. Precisely.
Yeah.
And therefore, what they can't do.
Yep. Yep.
The tremendous piece about actually recognizing and appreciating that satisfaction with what you have, who and what you are, and what position you are in, is that contrary to what most individuals think, rather than creating complacency, it actually inspires you because it validates what you can do rather than what you can't do.
Right. And that's the next step, I think, for me is exploring that, because this state of satisfaction and of increasing that and noticing much more easily a small, you know, movements towards dissatisfaction, that seems to have, you know, is of a more recent development, let's say, in my life. And so then seeing, you know, what comes out of that is a lot of that is still to come. But at the same time, I can get comfortable with the idea that, you know, there's a lot of, even from the traditional way of thinking about the world, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty, right? And you never know what's going to happen is the traditional way, and maybe in this way as well, but I'm going to be all right. That sense.
I'm understanding. And what directions have you been exploring or entertaining in relation to that subject of what comes next?
I would say that there is a sense of a little bit of boredom with what I'm currently doing. So I don't think I'm going to want to continue in what I'm doing right now for you know, a long period of time. I am doing a little bit of what we spoke about as far as exploring what is out there, talking to different people. At the same time, I'm also focusing a lot on building a sense of trust or practicing a sense of trust.
Yes. What do you want to do?
I would like to do something similar to what I was doing, but, you know, I've found positions that I believe that I would like to do. It's a lot less of the, for example, the daily writing, that type of producing, but a lot more of like the conversations, talking to people in the industry, networking. Like, I think that's what I, you know, that's the aspects I really enjoy in the job that I had.
If you could move in any direction at all.
Uh-huh.
If you could engage whatever action you wanted and produce money doing it, what would you do?
Help people.
Oh. How?
Support. I'm a good supporter. And I could see, like, whenever I speak with anyone, you know, from paying attention to what I'm doing, I can see where they're focused. I could see their point of concentration.
Excellent. Now, how could you translate that into, let us say, a job situation that is somewhat similar to what you engaged previously, but turn it to be more of this type of fact?
Could be support for people in business, in the field, I suppose.
Now, understand that
sort of help them balance.
Yes, in business. Supporting individuals and perhaps helping them balance isn't only about what they do at work.
Right, right. Because that's not what's going to ultimately, they just focus on one area, it's not going to make them happy.
Correct. Therefore, it is more of a matter of engaging them in a manner that supports them in their life in general, in every capacity. And what would you call that kind of a job?
What would you call that kind of job? I guess the term that I've seen out there that I'm not a huge fan of, just because it's not very definitive, or it's not, it just strikes me as a little vague, is there's a term called coach.
But what would you call it? If you were to assign a name to this type of position, what would it be?
I think I would need to think about that for a little bit.
Very well.
Contemplate it.
I would express to you that in addition to contemplating what you would name that type of position, I would encourage you to also contemplate the position itself.
Right.
And creating that type of position for yourself, and then being that. And perhaps also contemplating being that, not necessarily attached to one company.
Right.
But being independent of one company and creating that type of expression that could be used by any company.
That's very interesting. Okay, I'll do that and we'll discuss.
And it wouldn't even have to be any company that you are necessarily familiar with.
Right.
It could literally be any company.
All right, well, I'll that's kind of new to me, thinking of that. So I'll explore that from a state of satisfaction, and we can discuss it next time.
Very well.
Wanted to ask about a couple of things that we spoke about last time, which was a few of the, let's call them, not beneficial expressions that I could get caught up in. One of which was focusing on a lack of productivity. And I believe that, then also on related to like anticipation or concerns, that I've been making continuous improvements in those areas as well and in doing those less. And so I wanted to verify that.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you. And you. So you're verifying that that's correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I would agree with you.
Okay. Acknowledging it, labeling it, noticing it, and moving, changing the direction of the attention.
Yes. And I would express that that is a significant accomplishment.
Thank you. And I'll notice, like, even if I notice myself being concerned, and, it can creep on you a little bit like a mood, and where it's very subtle, But then I'll ask myself, is this really what I want to choose?
Ah.
Yeah.
That is a significant question.
Yeah. I like that.
That is definitely a significant question. Is it actually what you want to choose?
Right. Because we had spoke about how I did not create a certain job, and, you know, part of it was related to doubting it.
Correct.
Okay. Wanted to ask about... Okay, so this is something going back to Lester Levinson again, and wanted to bridge again the language he's using, and what I think he's saying is related to flow. He talks about it's important to let go of the sense of being a doer. And so someone asked him, I'm a little confused, you mean we take no action physically? And he goes, no, in your mind you take no action. When you release and you let it happen, your body goes through the motions, but you have a sense of not being the doer. And what I think he is describing is flow, being in the flow.
I would agree.
Okay.
And that expression, as I have expressed to you, about being open to without looking for.
Right.
Because when you are looking for, you are planning out, and you are thinking about, and you are doing. But when you are open to, but aren't looking for, then you aren't necessarily doing in relation to anything specific.
Right. Right, right. Yep. That also reminds me of something you mentioned to another person recently, which was, and that is how you generate your own power, because you stop narrowing your attention in only certain directions, and that is the way to allowance.
Correct. Yes.
So one of the things that I have a couple of practices I was going to share, because I change slightly, let's call it, every couple of days, exactly how I'm practicing with my attention, right? But they're all very similar, but they're just different ways to think about it. And so one of the ways that I've been doing is basically choosing not to narrow or not to close my attention. And watching how that closing and that narrowing happens automatically, then relaxing it, letting it go.
Like that.
I would say it's a lot is related to simply thinking. I mean, even if I'm just sitting in a room by myself.
I would very much agree. But offer an example.
Any subject that I am focused on mentally or that I am attempting to manipulate or wanting to manipulate, I will narrow my attention. And so I found by practicing this not closing, let's call it, or not narrowing, I become much more aware of what I'm doing, and it's much easier to spot that narrowing when it doesn't.
I agree.
So that got me thinking about the idea of my energy being more binary than I normally think about it. Right? Because in this case, we're speaking about being open or narrow. And, you know, rather than focused on appreciating a certain subject, but it, again, it's very similar to it's the same thing, I'm sure, as when you speak about being present. So it's not different. But let me give you another quote, and I think this ties into, this is something else that Lester had said. And he said, you don't sit down to wait. You don't do anything. Just let go of that sense of doership, right? So that's that narrowing and thinking about. And you just know that everything is perfect. And we spoke about in the past how that is equivalent to enough. So basically you're in a state of satisfaction. And then he says, the slightest thought you have will come into being quickly. Whatever you think will come into being if you let it go, because you're invoking your infinite power.
And that is moving directly in line rather than moving through the labyrinth. In your terms, getting out of your own way.
That is something I can do. it's an easier way to understand it.
Yes, it is something you can do.
Okay.
There is such immense power in letting go. But you are so conditioned to think in terms of control that you equate control with power. And it isn't. It is the opposite. There is such tremendous power in letting go, because then you allow.
Right. And that ties in perfectly with my historical experience of when things have really worked very well, when I was doing a lot of the guided meditation exercises, because that was a way of us, you know, distracting my attention from control.
Yes.
Into allowance.
Which is excellent, because this is something that is so ingrained.
Mm-hmm.
It is all around you, therefore it is continuously reinforced. It is so pervasive in how it is reinforced with all of you continuously, and how it is taught in everything. Everything. Control is good. Control is better. Control is power. Control is directed. No, it isn't. It is restricting. It is limiting. It is constricting. But that isn't what you are taught. I would express to you as very, very small individuals, when you are small ones, when you are being toilet trained, what are you being told?
Toilet trained. You're being told to control yourself?
Yes. You are being taught to control bodily function. And you are being taught that in controlling, this is good and it gives you more freedom. Therefore, control gives you more freedom. That begins when you are infant. Even before you are being toilet trained.
Now, that's a specific area I don't really want to give up control yet.
It is merely an example of the tremendous expression of control.
Mm-hmm.
And how, even at very young ages, you are being taught control. And not only are you being taught control, but you are being taught that control is good and that it gives you freedom.
Right. Even related to productivity and
definitely
being responsible.
Yes. What I would say to you is, yes, in some situations, you may look at a certain subject and you may choose to move in certain directions because you want to, but not merely because this is what you were taught and that it teaches you that it is beneficial to you because it gives you more freedom.
Ah, right, because then you're basically using it, the stick over your own head again, to beat
yes.
yourself into submission.
Yes. Precisely.
Yep. Yep.
I would say to you, think about how many individuals in your country or in your world interpret difficulties with eating, difficulties with weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you are being taught as infants to control hunger. Which leads you in what direction?
To focus on what you don't want.
And to focus on not enough, and to focus on having more food.
Because you're not supposed to eat every hour or 2 hours, so I'll load up. And...
Yes. And therefore, you learn very young to be consuming food improperly.
Ah, that's very interesting. That's something that is actually, I think, nowadays, maybe less pervasive than it was 20 or 30 years ago, because I, at least from what I see with my kids and their friends, growing up with me, you didn't have nearly as many options as they have nowadays. And so if you didn't eat at your meal, you know, and plus I think there was a stricter puritanical environment. Is that correct, or is that just a...
What I would say is that in that regard, in what you are expressing, the pendulum has swung in the other direction, but it hasn't balanced.
Okay.
And I would express that the difficulties and the ensuing results of that have increased.
Now it's snack all the time.
I would express that in your world presently, there is more difficulties with weight and more obesity than there has ever been in your history.
Well, I know that's the case, but I'm sure there are... Well, I'm not sure what the reasons are.
I would say that much of this is translated in relation to control.
Okay.
Especially in this time framework, in this new century, we are obviously noticing so much more of this particular expression of obesity and so much more in children. But in this, I would express that one of the reasons is that, as we have discussed many times previously, children born into this century are different. They are more aware. Therefore, the more you attempt to control, the more you encourage resistance and rebellion, which is another factor in relation to many of these problems, eating being only one of them.
I mean, I think I'm kind of the same way. I remember growing up and there was a lot of issues with, I definitely, the attempts to control did not lead to me being a happier, better individual.
Correct. They don't. I would very much agree.
Okay. So another way I've been practicing this opening and not narrowing is noticing when either resistance or some sort of inner disturbance comes into my awareness and allowing myself again to relax back into ease and sort of an acceptance. And these are different ways I kind of conceptualize this to myself. Just because whatever, each day, you know, something a little bit different seems to make more sense.
Excellent. And what would be an example of that in a daily activity?
Again, it's so pervasive. Inner resistance or the disturbance, I mean, it could come from anything, from watching someone do something that you think that they shouldn't be doing. Or, you know, another way I was practicing the other day was we had, I want to say, three or four other kids, friends of my kids, their friends were over. And it was obviously very hectic and loud, and so that was an opportunity to practice.
Excellent.
One thing I wanted to ask before, I do want to go on to sharing these subjects with the kids. But before I do that, I just wanted to, if you could touch upon the idea that when you change your energy expression, let's say you're moving from you notice you're in a state of agitation, right? And you realize that. And you say, okay, I want to move towards a state of expanding satisfaction. the initial movements in that direction feel wrong.
Meaning?
They don't feel... That's the way it feels to me. It feels wrong. But I know from...
But offer an example.
Well, okay, if I'm in a state of agitation and I bring my focus back to now. I'm fine now. I have enough money now. It feels false.
Correct.
For the first, let's say, 5-10 minutes.
Correct. Or if you perceive someone has wronged you and you are angry.
Mm-hmm.
And you stop momentarily and you express in a different manner. You are correct. It feels wrong. Yes.
And is that
what... It feels genuine.
It feels what?
It feels ingenuine.
Right, right. It, like you're faking it or...
And forcing.
Forcing. But that's just... Is that what prevents a lot of movement in that direction?
Most definitely. This is what I have been expressing to all of you for a time framework now in relation to not allowing feelings to dictate your behavior or your choices. Because you automatically do.
Right.
And you justify it by precisely what you are expressing now, that it feels ingenuine or it feels wrong to move in a different direction. You think you are denying what you are feeling by moving in a different direction. You aren't, but you think you are because you are still generating the feeling.
Right.
You think that until the feeling dissipates or goes away.
Right, right. That I got to fix the feeling first, then I can do that other thing.
Correct. That the feeling has to go away first. But that can actually incorporate some time because you are experts at perpetuating the feelings because you turn those feelings into them feelings so quickly.
I play with this a lot, particularly in the morning time frame, because I usually will awake with a negative mood or feeling. And so, I very quickly notice what I'm doing and what direction my attention's focused in, and I start moving the other direction. And so, it's just interesting exploring how that, I've done it enough times to have confidence in the process. But you know what I mean.
Yes.
Okay.
And what is it about the morning that irritates you?
I don't think it's a major irritation. It's... In fact, a lot of it depends on what stage of sleep I'm in when I wake up.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, there's certain times where you could pop right out of bed, but there are other times where let's say an hour ago would have been the time you could have popped right out of bed, but because you chose to sleep, now it's much harder to get up.
I'm understanding. And in that, I would say that what you are doing is excellent and is definitely a successful step, which can lead you into the next step, even if it isn't a significant irritation. It is not a matter of that. It is a matter of how consistent it is.
Okay.
And in that you can alter your perception by engaging the action that you are engaging,
mm-hmm.
therefore, ultimately, eventually alter your perception, and then you don't experience that irritation at all.
Ah, so I train that irritation into being. So every time I looked at the alarm clock and confessed, that reinforced it.
And you can change it relatively quickly.
Okay.
It is all a matter of perception, my friend.
Right. So I wanted to get on to sharing this information with the kids. And so one of the things that the way I've started initially a little bit is when they're beating themselves up, right? Because that's a way that any, let's say, modern psychologist, psychiatrist would agree that that's not beneficial. Nobody would argue that this is crazy material that you're...
Correct.
Right. But wanted to get ideas that you had, just because I haven't really explored this subject to a large degree or thought about it in a large degree, but maybe get some ideas from you on how to approach that.
This is somewhat of a broad subject.
Yeah, and I mean, specific to my kids, too, as well, because I know everyone is, like, certainly my daughter and my son are very different individuals.
I'm understanding, but what I would say is that in relation to children, one factor is communicating with them that whatever they feel is acceptable, regardless of what it is, that everything that they feel is acceptable, but that it doesn't require doing about. This is a subject that is also very ingrained in all of you from very, very, very young ages. And this is an important factor to alter if you are engaging with children and you are moving in a direction of this information with children or moving in a direction of shifting with them. It is a matter of not reinforcing old
right
methods. And one of them is that whatever you feel is acceptable and is valid, and to acknowledge that, but that most of your feelings do not require doing about them. The next piece is when a child is discounting themselves or devaluing themselves, it is a matter of engaging them and actually helping them to discover why. What is their evidence that is giving them this message?
And a lot of times it's comparison.
Many times it is comparison. Many times it is them noticing a difference in themselves. In this, I would express that the first piece is to help them to identify what it is that is giving them evidence that is supporting the idea that they are of less value, less importance, or less worth. Sometimes it is a matter of not comparing. Sometimes it is a matter of them evaluating to themselves what they perceive they are good at and what they are not good at.
Right.
And focusing on what they are not good at.
Mm-hmm.
And that they should be. Or that they have to be. Especially in school-age children, because they are engaging many different subjects, and some of them may be easier for them, and some of them may be more difficult.
Absolutely.
Some of them they may understand and they may like, some of them they may not understand, and some of them they may dislike. And in that, the subjects that they incorporate more difficulty with, that becomes evidence to them that there is something wrong with them, or that they are not good enough, or that they should be better. And in that, they immediately judge themselves if something is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In that, it is also a matter of once you can help them to identify, because it isn't about you identifying, it is about them identifying, because many times they don't actually know. They haven't actually defined why they feel bad.
Okay.
Or why they discount themselves. They
merely
do it. And in that, once they have actually defined what their own evidence is about what they are discounting themselves with, then it is a matter of engaging with them in a different manner to discover how to approach a particular subject in a different manner that is easier for them. Schools move in specific regimens, and everyone must be participating in the regiment in the same manner. But individuals don't function in that manner. Therefore, it is a matter of discovering tricks and different methods of how the child can engage a particular subject that allows them to acknowledge themselves, not discount themselves, and to also accomplish. And it may not be a matter of a particular academic subject. It could be a subject of social actions that the child discounts themselves because they perceive they don't fit in, or they don't fit in because of how they speak, or what they wear, or how tall they are, or how short they are, or there can be any number of reasons that the child will give themselves a reason that they aren't good enough, or that they are less than. And once you have helped them to define what that is, then it is a matter of being creative and discovering a different manner in which the child can express themselves in a genuine, natural capacity, but that will also be accepted.
That seems harder. The first part I got a good handle.
I am understanding.
But I think
that I would
the second part flows out of the first part to a degree.
Yes, and a considerable amount of what children interpret difficulty with is acceptance with fears.
Right.
Therefore, it is a matter of creatively discovering manners in which the child can express themselves in a genuine manner without comparing, and also in their terms, fit in with their peers.
What about for just even for the idea of why they should care about what they're doing mentally?
I would say to you that is a tremendous ideal, but in actuality, in reality, this is a part of their development. They do care, and it does matter.
Oh, you mean they automatically care? Because a lot of people don't care what they do. Even people that are familiar with these ideas, or they don't take advantage of it.
I'm understanding. children do care automatically. Because they are learning, which I would say, ideally, if you were all moving in a direction similar to children, you would always be moving in that direction and always be learning. But children do this naturally.
Okay.
And their environment plays a significant part in what they learn. They are continuously looking at examples. And examples are not only expressed by adults. They are also expressed by their peers.
Ah, so being able to build, help them build that identification by pointing it out when we see, notice what so-and-so is doing, that's not helpful for them, or, you know, that's something we're all, everyone does, but it's not necessarily helpful for them. Something like that?
No.
Okay.
Because that is not actually addressing to what they are experiencing.
That's just the outer.
That is attempting to give them different guidelines. And that doesn't actually address to what they are experiencing. And in that, no, it is a matter of perhaps taking an example of what another child is doing that, let us say, they like or they want to do or they wish they were like that child.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at what is it about that child that they like, that they want to be like, that they wish they were more like. And then discovering some aspect of this child that is somewhat similar, that might be expressed differently, but that somewhat fit with what they are looking at, that they like, that they want.
Okay.
Why is that child popular? Why do other children like that child? Why do they gather around that child? How does that child express? What do they do?
I haven't the faintest idea.
But you would know if you ask those questions.
Right, right.
Because your child knows.
Right, right. They can, right.
They can answer those questions. And then you can discover, very well, you can discover where are the similarities. Not the same, but how can your differences fit with those other expressions? They don't have to be the same. What is important is that they want to fit.
Right. Okay. Very good, Elias. It's great speaking with you again.
And you also, my friend, as always. I shall greatly be anticipating our next meeting and more of our stimulating conversations.
Same here. Thank you.
In wondrous lovingness to you, my dear friend, and in great congratulations of what you are accomplishing. Au revoir.
Thank you, Elias. Goodbye.